Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Scott Reich of Crime Talk. And today on the docket, number one, Cheryl Lynn Cadle. She made it to Dr. Oz. Who had her first? Yeah, that's right. We did. Second, the Russicks actually defend Christopher Watts. A Patrick Frazee trial update and our contestant for the dumb criminal of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Scott Reich of Crime Talk, and thank you for tuning into our channel. First, if you have not already subscribed, we would ask you to please do so. If you like the video, hit that little like button, and if you leave us a comment, I promise we will read them. First on the docket, Cheryl Lynn Cadle. You'll remember her. She's the one that wrote the book regarding Christopher Watts, Letters from Chris. Well, she was on the Dr. Oz show today talking about her book. Who interviewed her first? That's right. Yeah, we did. And whether you like Cheryl Lynn Cadle at all, whether you buy her book or don't buy her book, she is one of the few people that have spoken to Chris Watts after his plea and sentencing. So it still sheds some light on it. And although I haven't seen all of the Dr. Oz show, it would appear that what is confirmed is his narcissistic tendencies that he has. Now, next. And I'm not sure why I didn't know of this, but I apologize. But there's actually a statement put out by the Russicks' attorney shortly after the book was published. And they take great exception with Ms. Cadle, as they thought that this was going to be a book as a journey of Mr. Watts to finding Christianity. The statement, which I'll put up here, clearly shows that they don't believe that's what the book represents. They didn't get an advance copy. Who did? That's right, I did. I got nothing out of it. I asked. That's all I did. Maybe people should ask. Anyway, so the Russicks, through their attorney here in Denver, actually Fort Collins, Colorado, Grant and Hoffman, wrote a firm and said that that Ms. Cadle's request to speak with Mr. Watts was her intention of writing a book about his redemption through Christ. It was Christopher Watts' intention that this book be used to help guide people to their Christian faith. The Russicks' attorneys state that Ms. Cadle's previous attorneys led them to believe that the letters from Christopher was not meant for publication until early next year. It was only through a friendly connection with the Russicks family that they were able to discover the book was slated for release as early as October 7th. At no point did Ms. Cadle share this information with the family or the Watts. They described this book as anything from being a tale of one man's struggle to find his faith and redemption through Christ. This book is, in the author's own words, a true crime story with important information to put the pieces of the puzzle together for inquiring minds. And this is the part I thought was a little interesting. Mrs. Cadle took advantage of Mr. Watts and willfully deceived a family in mourning over a still very recent and tragic loss. Do that as you may. I am not taking any type of position either way. Ms. Cadle wrote a book. If you don't want to buy it, you don't have to buy it. If you don't want to watch a video interview of her, you don't have to watch a video interview of her. If you think there's something there, people are free to do so. We talked about this the other day. People are still interested in the Watts case. I think they will be for a long time, even after his demise in prison. So we'll leave it at that. But it was a little surprising that the Russicks were actually defending Christopher Watts in that last paragraph of the statement that they put out. Next on the docket is an update as it relates to the Patrick Frazee trial. For those of you who don't know yet, Patrick Frazee is accused of killing the mother of his child, Kelsey Barrett, and his one-time fiance. It is alleged that Patrick Frazee killed his girlfriend, Kelsey Barrett, and then with the assistance of Patrick Frazee's other girlfriend, his girlfriend slash mistress slash old girlfriend, Crystal Lee Kenny, who drove from Idaho to clean up the the mess in the apartment where she was allegedly killed and then disposed of and burned the body on the Frazee Ranch. So Crystal Lee Kenny has received a good deal, to say the least. She pled guilty where she looks at no more exposure than a three-year sentence in the Colorado Department of Corrections. And you can always tell the strength of the district attorney's case is by the benefit that they give to the cooperating defendant. In this particular case, Crystal Lee Kenny, who in theory was conspiring to go kill Miss Kelsey Barrett at least three times by her own admission, per the request of Patrick Frazee, per her own admission, but only pleads guilty to tampering with evidence. So like I said, if you look at the smoking deal that the co-defendant gets that they need to make the case, you know that they have a weak case. If they had a solid case, if they had a Loctite solid case against Patrick Frazee, they wouldn't even need Crystal Lee Kenny. They need her to lay the story, hence her good deal. And as we talked about in previous videos, now that Crystal Lee Kenny has testified, the purpose of the prosecution from this point forward will simply be to try and corroborate every little piece of evidence that she has talked about and to corroborate that. Today, it was former employees that worked with nurse Crystal Lee Kenny, who said that they were familiar with the fact that she left on Thanksgiving. One worked with her and said she seemed a little down. She was tired when she got back. And the other witness was there to testify to the fact that she covered her shift on Thanksgiving and the day after. Additionally, there were statements made by Miss Kenny that, once again, the prosecution is trying to corroborate or list as some sort of prior consistent statement. Prior consistent statements are not hearsay. So, for example, if Miss Kenny says, "I told my coworker something," the defense says, "Oh, you really didn't say that," and kind of infers it was something that was made up, or her credibility has been attacked. Prior consistent statements, i.e. they bring the witness in and said, "Oh yeah, Miss Kenny did tell me this, that she got wrapped up in something in Colorado with this Frazee guy." That's a prior consistent statement. That is not hearsay. One of the exceptions to the hearsay rule, because it goes back to impeach witnesses, because you don't want people basically saying, "Liar, liar, pants on fire." You can use that a prior consistent statement to show that it is in fact consistent with that. Hopefully, I made that clear. The other witness who was testified today was Megan Garrison of Jerome, Idaho. This was a friend of Crystal Lee Kenny, and apparently the two of them swapped cars. Crystal Lee Kenny had a big truck, not very economical driving back and forth to Colorado. So on her trip back over the Thanksgiving holiday, Crystal Lee Kenny, borrowed the vehicle of Miss Garrison, a Passat. She also had a firearm in the car. When the FBI searched the car, local authorities looked at the car, they found a firearm underneath the seat. She said, "Yeah, that's mine." When they found it, it only had six rounds in it, and she could not recall if there was, in fact, a bullet in the chamber, because in previous statements, the witnesses stated that she thought she always carried the firearm with a full magazine in one chamber, with one round in the chamber, so obviously it's ready to fire. She couldn't remember that. I bet the defense will make some hay out of that. Like I said, based upon the evidence that comes out, it's exactly as the way I thought they were going to defend it, which we'll ultimately see. But they've been kind of quiet in their attacks and kind of holding it. You know, they didn't prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. And I think they're going to argue is that Crystal Lee Kenny came here to Colorado as a jealous girlfriend, took care of everything, and then perhaps Patrick Frazee at most probably helped to dispose of the body of Kelsey Barrett. But we'll see how that shakes out. Additionally, this afternoon, some FBI agents as well as some local law enforcement in Idaho were called as they searched the home of Crystal Lee Kenny, as well as locating a burn pit outside her house. For those of you who don't know, sometimes when you live in rural communities, they burn their trash, they burn their garbage. So they have a burn pit. It's not necessarily anything unusual. You know, when sometimes in the spring, if I'm flying out of Denver, you can see fires out in rural areas because people are burning their trash. That's what they do. It's not that uncommon at all. So to have a burn pit on a rural farm is not necessarily anything unusual at all. One of the officers from Idaho did say that in one of the burn pits that he did find some glass and what appeared to be some sort of electronic device, which would be consistent with Crystal Lee Kenny's statement that she disposed of the phone, the burner phone, and at her house in a burn pit. But that does not necessarily exclude her from doing something to Miss Barrett while she was in Colorado, and she comes home and burns the burner phone because she was planning to do something nefarious. We'll see how the jury believes it. A Robert Slagle, who was a good friend of Patrick Frazee, also testified after Kelsey Barrett went missing. He kind of drove around with Patrick Frazee. And what the district attorneys were referring to as an alibi obtaining trip, kind of stating where he was during the times where Miss Barrett would have been missing or something else was going on. For example, going to the bank, the gas station, etc. Mr. Slagle also did not recall any conversation regarding no body, no case. He said he certainly would have remembered that and certainly did not recall that conversation. Then some analysts from the Colorado Bureau of Investigation came in to analyze what they believed to be blood and how they went around contacting that. So in the next day or so, you should expect the actual lab personnel from CBI that actually performed the test to determine if this is in fact blood. Any of those tests, they have to be coming. The prosecution has to lay the foundation of how they collected it, what they did with the sample, who they sent it off to. Then they're going to bring in the people that received it, tested it, and what the results are. Late today, the prosecution also called some fire investigators from the Colorado Bureau of Investigation, and their goal was to simply lay out the fact that the fire pit found on the Frazee Ranch would be consistent with somebody burning items on the property. They would also be able to testify as an expert that, for example, that the plastic would bin that was supposedly had the body of Kelsey Barrett would have burned first, and then the body. Duh. Really? I know. And sometimes that's the thing about court. You have to ask the obvious questions to get that in to evidence. On cross-examination, the defense was able to point out that the metal hinges and clasps that were supposedly on this tote that should have been in the burn area, none were found. Now, the prosecution then gets up on redirect and tries to make it clear that those items could have been cleaned up in some way. Now, that's not a good position for the prosecution to be in when they start talking about possibilities. You know, usually it's defense saying, isn't it probable? Isn't it possible that this could have happened or this could have happened? So when the prosecution's saying, yeah, there's nothing there, but isn't it possible that somebody may have cleaned those up? It's kind of speculation, but apparently it's getting in. But it's not a good sign for the prosecution when they're trying to fill in the testimony with possibilities. They are supposed to know. And last but not least, a couple of farriers. As you know, Frazee was not only a rancher, but he was a farrier, you know, the person that puts on the horseshoes. Talked to other farriers, and he said, hey, you know what? We're not getting along with the mother of the child. If she just pays for the medical bills and things like that, that's good to go. And then he kind of progressed to, like, I just want her gone. And like I said, these could be possibly completely innocent statements, or they could be something absolutely nefarious. Those are the questions of fact that the jury decides. And we'll have to wait and see, because we'll all find out at the exact same time. Next on the docket, the contestant for the Dumb Criminal of the Week. And our contestant today is a gentleman by the name of David Kalb, and he is from Pennsylvania. And apparently Mr. Kalb got locked out of his apartment. So he said, what am I going to do next? I got locked out of my apartment. He goes down to a buddy's door and knocks on the friend's door, who apparently is not home or somehow makes a disturbance, where the police are called. Mr. Kalb tells the police that he lost his key and he would like to get in, but that his friend has a key. So somehow they get the key from the friend's apartment. Mr. Kalb then invites the police upstairs to help him look for the key. What Mr. Kalb forgot to do was to hide his marijuana, his mushrooms, and his mason jars full of ingredients to make psychedelic mushrooms. Needless to say, Mr. Kalb was promptly arrested for manufacturing of psychedelic mushrooms. Now, what's even better is I think this mugshot clearly shows that Mr. Kalb did not grasp the severity of the situation, and perhaps Mr. Kalb should not use so many mushrooms. We'll see if he still has that smiling face when these proceedings continue. That's all we have for Crime Talk. Appreciate you watching. Have a great day. We'll see you next time on Crime Talk.